You can hear performance today, this afternoon at 1, and again this evening at 8 here on WMUK 102.1 FM and online at WMUK.org from Western Michigan University. It's 7 minutes after 10. I'm Kara Lawrence. Our forecast calling for a bit of sun today with highs in the mid-40s. Skies will become partly cloudy this evening, bringing with them a 30% chance of rain showers overnight with lows in the low 30s. For Thursday, partly sunny with a 40% chance of rain until midday, then sunshine in the afternoon Thursday, a high in the upper 40s for tomorrow. It's currently 41 degrees here in Kalamazoo. Well, tonight at Western Michigan University School of Music in the Dalton Center, the Bullock Performance Institute series continues with a program called Quintessentially Cowan. And here I am with Scott Cowan, whose music and musicianship will be celebrated tonight. It's great to have you here this morning.
Thanks, Kara. It's great to be here.
So this program, Quintessentially Cowan, brings together a lot of people to play music you've written over about what span of time would you say?
I would say around 25 years. I think we were just chatting that one of the selections on there is about 25 years old at least.
Much of your music, of course, has been composed here at home, but you've also had a chance to travel and go to some pretty special places and work on music as well, I remember.
Yeah. Back in 2013, I had an opportunity as a Fulbright recipient to go over to Northern Ireland and spend 6 months over there playing in the Belfast jazz clubs and working on a book. And it was just a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. It was incredible.
Besides working on your own pieces, what are some of the, you know, day-to-day things that you are tasked with as a professor at Western Michigan University?
Well, makes me tired thinking about that.
I know, and I have to get you back by 11 o'clock to teach a class.
Yep. I've been teaching the core classes at Western Michigan University in the jazz area for years, and that includes just about anything you could, all things jazz, from arranging one, arranging two, to pioneered a couple of new courses, a jazz piano class for non-majors, a jazz oral skills class. In my applied studio, I teach composition and arranging and all of those to private students. And then I also have the Improv 1 and Improv 2. So I don't do that all at the same time, of course, but it cycles around and I do all that. Plus, I'm taking on the duties of the chair of the jazz area now, starting this fall. So all of the details surrounding those kinds of activities as well. So it definitely keeps me off the street and up in the middle of the night sometimes.
That's a long list. The jazz for non-majors class, that it sounds like you brought the idea to the school and had it created. That's a category that a lot of us fit into who are not jazz musicians. I'm wondering, is this a living art form where you have to update and change a lot of your curriculum as you teach?
You know, there's a reservoir of common tools in order to jump into some kind of an understanding of jazz, whether you're creating it or trying to perform it. And I find myself as a pedagogue directing students to that reservoir of tools, kind of like a carpenter with their tool belt. They have their hammer, they've got their saws and their pencils and all of those kinds of things, and they can use those. It's a means to a greater end, which for some builders, it can be very artistic. For probably most, it's trying to get the job done, make sure that you build something that will withstand what it needs to withstand and whatnot. And so for jazz musicians, it's diving into that reservoir of common things, whether it's chord scales, the theory behind it, how to create voicings and what's the parameters for using these kinds of extensions and form and all of those kinds of things. And then hopefully if I can give those skills, those basic skills, they can go on to build something artistic. That's the goal anyway. So whether if it's a jazz piano class for non-piano players, because they have the keyboard in front of them, it's almost as if they're staring at all of these utensils that they can use right there. And they can see it and hear it. And the right hand can play single note lines over the left hand, which defines the harmony. So it can be a very eye-opening experience and hopefully empower them in order to, again, either as an improviser or a creator or just simply having a better understanding of what are the infrastructures that make jazz tick.
Are you still amazed by some of the common elements that you were talking about?
I'm thrilled with them. I mean, I've been teaching this for decades, so...
Yeah.
I'm not sure I'm surprised by any one, there's that hammer, Yet the way you can manipulate this information can be delightful. It still can be surprising. I mean, I still, when I sit and I compose and I hear things and then figure out how this works and how you make this work, it turns into a very exciting experience. It's funny. I think any artist maybe finds that once they get past the tools and they can use the tools as a mean to create art and they get caught up in that process, it's exhilarating. It's really exciting.
And you are, as a composer yourself, kind of modeling that for your students. There are always new students to work with at Western Michigan University and to hear individual styles and voices and progress. You've also seen some new colleagues on the faculty, some of whom will be appearing tonight as part of the concert, Matthew Fries being one.
Yes, we're so delighted that he relocated from New York City. I couldn't tell you if it's been at least over 20 years that he's been in New York City as a hardcore jazz pianist in all sorts of venues as a solo pianist or accompanying for different artists, different bands. And he's just a wonderful artist. And hearing him tonight, as we were rehearsing last night, I was just reminded, man, he's heavy. He's just a fantastic musician, and he adds so much. And on that note, I'm excited that this presentation tonight will feature all of our jazz faculty at Western Michigan University. And I can't remember, actually, in 16 and a half years, the last time that all of us were on the stage contributing as performing artists. We've been on the stage together, but it's usually fronting student ensembles, whether it be a jazz masters or something like that. But this is the culminating piece tonight will be bringing everyone on stage, and actually even some of the small group, everyone will be there. Professor Jaspers, our director of jazz vocal here, will also be contributing to the small ensemble work, and I'm just delighted that he's on board. It's such a really fun texture to have voice with all of the horns, and just being able to bring everyone from a jazz faculty point of view together on stage, kind of as a sign of artistic solidarity. So the students can see us involved, and we're all collaborating with the students as well. So to me, it's a win-win-win.
Well, let me tell folks that the concert begins at 7:30 p.m. At 7 o'clock, though, there'll be the live and interactive portion where you get to hear a little about what's going on behind the scenes with the artists on stage in a sort of a Q&A session. The music starts at 7:30, and it's in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. It's a ticketed concert. You can find information right now through the School of Music website at wmich.edu/music/events. Tickets are probably being handled through the Miller Auditorium box office. That's millerauditorium.com or 387-2300. You mentioned Greg Jaspers. Let's look at some of the other faculty as well. There's Andrew Rathbun on tenor saxophone. He's a newer member to the School of Music, I think 5 years now.
Yeah.
About that.
Yep.
Greg Jaspers, Matthew Fries, who's just started his first year.
Yep.
Then, of course, Tom Knifick, who is one of the core faculty members for a couple decades now.
At least.
And then we have Keith Hall, who I also still think of as a new addition, but has been contributing for at least 8 or 10 years now, I think.
At least.
Yeah, yeah.
At least, if not longer, actually.
Maybe because he was in roughly my graduating age when I was at the School of Music. I still think of him as being a youngster, but maybe I'm not so young anymore. So that's a great handful of highly talented people, plus yourself, of course. And who else is coming along for this?
We've got a few extra horns on this concert. It's everything from quintet, which is the typical two-horn lineup, in this case, trumpet and tenor. And then we've got piano, bass, and drums. And then I'll also bring in three of our stronger graduate students to help contribute to some of the larger small group selections, which will be anything from septet and octet. So we've got those three students, Yakis and Zintiski. He's from the Ukraine. He's a Fulbrighter, just a fantastic contributor. And then we've got Tyler Bullion, who's a second-year master's trombone student. And Ben Smith-Swartz did his undergrad here and then took some time off in Chicagoland and is back and is a tremendous talent. So he'll also be contributing in terms of the small group. And then, of course, our culmination is the entire jazz orchestra under my leadership has been for years.
Yeah.
And they will be premiering in the recital hall a new composition of mine called Summer Dragonfly. And this will feature Keith Hall on drums.
Outstanding. Yeah, there's five saxophonists, five trumpeters, four trombonists, and four in the rhythm section of the jazz orchestra. So that'll be a mighty finale to your concert tonight.
Indeed.
Again, that's at 7:30 p.m. with a 7 o'clock live and interactive portion. You've brought along a bit of music for us to sample, some of which may be on the program tonight. Other pieces have yet to be put to album or into a recording offering. But why don't we look at Turkish Delight, which caught my eye as both a sweet treat and a reference to a beloved series of children's books.
Yeah, I wrote a seven-movement suite back in 2001 for full big band, expanded big band, actually. And this is a movement. It's the whole suite is programmatic, and it's based on C.S. Lewis's The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And this was before it became so popular and came out
movies.
As movies and whatnot. But each of the movement represents one of the happenings within the story of the four kids and Aslan and the Wicked Witch and whatnot. And so this is an example of Edmund being enticed into the witch's house by being offered this Turkish Delight, which is has a spell on it, and Edmund turns against his brothers and sisters, and it turns out okay in the end, but there's sort of this mystifying, mysterious feeling with this Turkish Delight. It's yummy, and you can't stop eating it, but at the same time, you're left with a stomach ache, and you do things you shouldn't do.
Thank you. That's Turkish Delight, a composition by Scott Cowan, whose music will be featured tonight in a Bullock Performance Institute concert at the Dalton Center Recital Hall. It's called Quintessentially Cowan, and Dr. Cowan is my guest here this morning. So, great piece. First of all, you kind of added that lovely exoticism that Turkish implies, and you described it so well with the story of Edmund in the Chronicles of Narnia. Taking candy, he probably should have refused.
Absolutely.
From the white witch. Do you use literary or artistic influences or inspirations when you go to write a piece of music?
Absolutely. I mean, whether it be, and this is pretty common, you know, I could look at somebody like Duke Ellington, for me, who was one of the very first jazz composers who took concepts or moods or experiences, and he translated that into his own musical visions. And classical composers have been doing it for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. And so for me as well, if it's a book, in this case, it was a book and the wonderful story that C.S. Lewis painted. Other times it'll be a concept or a picture or an experience, and then trying to put that together. And what would that sound like? You know, if it's kind of like, let's take Mood Indigo by Duke Ellington. If the color indigo could write its own little song, what would that be? And that's what Duke did, you know. Or if it's a Daybreak Express. Ellington loved the sounds of trains. He used to travel crisscross across the United States. He hated to fly. And so he wrote three or four train pieces, and he tried to translate that into a jazz orchestra. What would a train sound like musically? Or Subtle Lament is another little piece, A Little Sadness. You know, if A Little Sadness could write its own little piece, what would that sound like? And so composers are constantly doing this as a source of inspiration. And yeah, it's very common.
Is there a particular time of day when tunes seem to pop into your head? Or do you have to be kind of disciplined and choose, here's a couple hours where I can focus on this?
You know, at this point in the season of my life, I'm so incredibly busy that I have to set a deadline. And the deadline is usually a performance, so that really puts a fire under me. And then I have to come up with, well, what have I presented? And I need to get some new stuff out there. And then I have to decide, well, what's that going to be? Is it going to be based on a concept, or is it maybe a tune that I had previously written and I want to flush it out? For example, Summer Dragonfly for full big band was originally written for a small group. Actually, you know what? I take that back. This is actually a funny story. That particular piece, we were trying to come up with a piece of music that would help get immediately to the heart of the abilities of our students. So it was actually written for rhythm section auditions at Western Michigan in the fall. And so we would throw this in front of a pianist, guitarist, bass, and drum player. And it was filled full of kicks and a number of skills to sort of demonstrate
what's a kick?
Oh, what's a kick?
Yeah.
Sorry. That's where the rhythm section has to play certain chords on certain beats in a bar, usually more of a staccato, or they have to hit it exactly at the right time. So they have to not only demonstrate melodic abilities, but also harmonic and rhythmic skills at the same time. So I wrote this little piece, and at that time it was called S'About Time. And it was actually written for Keith Hall, because Keith had been a part-timer for many years, and he was, we finally were able to see him transition into a full-time position. So I called it S'About Time. And then I retitled it Summer Dragonfly, My 9-year-old son, that's one of his favorite insects, a.k.a. It's About Time. So it's going to feature Keith tonight. And that rhythm evaluation piece has been turned into this full-blown big band piece. Of course, now I can't use that on auditions anymore.
Exactly. It's too,
kids will know what it sounds like.
I'd be worried, too, that some of the young players really don't like the piece because they were under such pressure.
Yes, well, perhaps.
Maybe it's grown on them. So you said rehearsal, you've rehearsed last night. Were there any pieces that you were putting the finishing touches on just before that?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I had written, I don't know, 2 or 3 new pieces for this presentation tomorrow night. And the last one that I had to, it was still warm as I was handing it to my colleagues, is called Laminin. And that particular piece is a description of a certain enzyme in the human body that if we didn't have it, we'd be in real trouble. So kind of an odd thing to pick, but it's just sort of a wonder. There are many things that I've written that cause one to reflect on why are we even alive? How does all this work anyway? And laminin was just an example of something that that if we didn't have, we'd be in real deep wheat. So I decided to write a piece, and it's a very different kind of a piece. It kind of uses minimalistic kinds of attributes as opposed to more traditional kinds of jazz. And that's the thing that I've always been. I get bored easily. So my works have a pretty diverse collection of that lend themselves towards improvisation. Yet I have such depth in my colleagues that I can throw what I throw at them and they can just jump right in and make it sound great. So
when you say minimalism, does that mean the sort of modal playing of Miles Davis or more Philip Glass?
I would say more Philip Glass, actually.
Yeah.
There's a repetitiveness in it that changes slightly and sort of puts you in sort of a zone, I guess. I think it's a kind of a relaxing zone. But at the same time, there's a little section that kind of goes into an Afro-Cuban, and then it goes back into the kind of that repetitive relaxing zone. So it sort of reflects, again, kind of a programmatic, the mystery of laminin. And nobody ever talks about it or, you know, how this enzyme can hold things together. And if we didn't have it, we'd be in real trouble.
Well, my guest is Scott Cowan, whose music will be celebrated tonight starting at 7:30 p.m. The program begins a little earlier if you choose to come for a Q&A session at 7 p.m. It's a ticketed event, so details on tickets are at MillerAuditorium.com, and the concert details are also posted at the School of Music website, wmich.edu/music/events, and tickets will also be available at the door. That's laminin. There's also a piece called agape, which sounds like isn't that the Greek word for welcome or love?
Love.
Love.
Yeah. That's the unconditional love.
Oh.
Yeah, you expect nothing in return. It's kind of one of those concepts that the world struggles with today.
Sure. No, we always want something in return.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you mentioned that was an older piece for you.
Much older. Yeah, that's going on probably 25 years. That was originally premiered in a big band concert at Jordan Hall at New England Conservatory when I was on faculty there as a part-timer. It's a ballad. And again, it's programmatic and that it tries to communicate this sense of the giving of love with not expecting anything in return. Lord knows we need that in the world today to kind of help everybody along.
May I also ask you about the title Pass the Grease, Please?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's just a down-home blues that has a few tricks up my sleeve, I guess, in there. But it just feels great. It's a shuffle. I've got extra horns on that as well. And it's just a good down-home, good feel, straight-ahead blues with a few surprises.
Well, maybe we can take a break to hear some more music and hear something that also sounds very feel-good. It's called Boogaloo Land.
Yes.
This is a big band piece, yeah.
This is a full-blown big band piece. And again, it's not a real boogaloo from, I don't know, the dance in the 1960s maybe, but it has sort of a shuffle and a real tap-your-foot kind of a experience and a great band playing. So it was a lot of fun to write.
Wow, it's a real hot performance of Boogaloo Land, written by my guest, Scott Cowan. And Scott's music will be on display tonight in the Dalton Center Recital Hall as part of the Bullock Performance Institute series. This brings together the entire jazz faculty of Western Michigan University, Andrew Rathbun, Greg Jaspers, Matthew Fries, Tom Kniffick, Keith Hall, plus members of the University Jazz Orchestra. And I hope that you've given yourself a few open places for you to solo on trumpet and flugelhorn.
We'll see about that. Every day is a new day. if the trumpet decides to be my friend tonight, then we might journey together.
Tonight is your night.
If the trumpet decides not to be my friend, then maybe we'll make a few guest appearances here and there. We'll see about that.
You were talking about juggling, composing, and teaching, and coaching, and then there's, of course, the trumpet calling you, too, saying, I need some attention.
Yes, and I do hear him calling or growling, one of the two. It's hard to tell.
Either way, something that will be the culmination of a lot of creative effort and fun work, as well as, the organizational aspect of it. It'll be nice when it's finally 7:30 p.m. tonight.
Well, I'm really looking forward to it, Kara.
Hit the stage. Any other final thoughts to leave with listeners before we hear one last piece?
Come tonight for a diverse showing of many different genres of jazz, with a showing of a solidarity of our jazz faculty and our top-notch students. Hope you enjoy it and we'll come out.
Okay. Well, would you please introduce one last piece from the album Jack's Place? I hadn't mentioned that before. This is your solo album, Jack's Place, featuring Tri-Fi, members of Tri-Fi, which now we have two of the three working at Western Michigan University, Keith Hall and Matthew Fries.
Yeah, what a blessing to have them on board. This particular piece called Popsicles, Taffy, and Donuts is not about food. It's actually about a wonderful, beautiful summer day with the family, going to the beach and just kicking back and enjoying summer leisure.
I remember it well, just a few months ago, now that we're clearly headed towards, the dark hours of the winter.
You know that when the water has left our little Dalton Center area, with the waterfall and the beautiful pool, you know that we're in for frigid temperatures and snow eventually. That's right.
Well, let's enjoy the last few moments of popsicle, taffy, and donuts. And Scott, thank you very, very much for coming and talking about your music here on WMUK. Have a great concert tonight.
Thank you, Kara. It's always a pleasure.